Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guests to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Hello, welcome to Mission Accepted. Let me see, what are you this week? Last week you were the coolest audience. The week before that you were the best. You've been the best for a very long time. You guys are groovy. This week you are groovy. There's been lots in the music world going on. You guys know this little trek across Ireland is kicking up a storm. So everybody's groovy this week, including you guys. And thank you so much for your support. You're subscribing, you're sharing. Our numbers are showing extensively in the world of international. So thank you very much for that. Okay, look, mission accepted. What does that mean? It means many different things to many different people. But if you are an entrepreneur, an entrepreneur, a creative, or a media, you know exactly what it means. It means that as soon as you get a hold of things, it changes. And you make this decision every single day. Am I hanging in there? Do I need to call a friend to hang in there today? Who thought entrepreneurship was a good idea? What was I thinking? Anyways, some of you jumped in, some of you were pushed in, but either way, you are in because at some point you said yes. And that's the most exciting thing. And it's funny because we have a great guest that's coming on today, Meg, and we were just having a little chat about really the mentorship and some of the things that you need when you decide to be an entrepreneur and the generation. And you guys know we're big on combining the generations. Never before have we had the Gen Z generation. Like, look at my 18-year-olds, you know, still resting. And we were up late last night and he's giving me advice on my business and I'm giving him advice on his business. When would you, okay, hands up. And if you are in the car, don't do it. But I mean, when was the last time that in my generation, I don't think at 18 years old, I would have gone to my parents and said, hey, I'd love to have your some advice about business and take it. And I sure in heck never thought that I was going to be going to my teenage son and going, hey, I need, what do you think about this? Here's this logo. What do you think about the logo? And, you know, just never before in a time. So I think we are in such a sweet spot for mentorship. Anyways, Meg has an amazing, amazing story of how she bounced herself into entrepreneurship. And bounced by, I mean, she had a few bruises, you know, she had to break a few ceilings and a few paradigms. So do share, please, Meg. Thank you for coming on to Mission Accepted today.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks so much for the opportunity. I think that, you know, I love bouncing off other people who also are there to kind of like show people that, you know, I actually got goosebumps when you're talking transgenerational, because to me, that's the important piece. I've for so long heard people talk about how you just need to like kind of let go of those other generations that don't act like we do. And we just need to like, you know, forget them and just keep building our businesses the way we always did. And I was always like, no, like that's the future. These guys have ideas that we don't have that we need to incorporate into how we're doing things. And they think differently in a beautiful way. And if we could just combine those traits with like what we know about grit, determination, like staying the course, like being able to stay there long game, whew, like that's where it gets cool. And so, yeah, I'm super happy to chat with you today. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So for many of you guys who don't know, obviously, anything about me. So my name is Dr. Meg Haggett. I am somebody who I went to university. I was a farm girl from Ontario. I went to university off of literally a whim. And actually, I feel like this was the first biggest life lesson piece, was that I was lucky enough, thank you, mom and dad, that nobody interfered with my whimsical plan. Because what happened was I watched a movie, which for y'all who are old enough, Outbreak was amazing. Outbreak was awesome. But Outbreak in the 90s was this movie about a virus basically wiping out potentially a U.S. town. And like the army was trying to use it as a bio, like kind of war type of a thing. I somehow watched that movie and was like, that is so cool. I want to study biology. And like, I don't remember having an inkling before that. I hated science fairs as a child. And so like, I don't know where it really came from, but like that movie sparked something in me that, hilariously enough, I don't study viruses at all, but it sparked something in me that I was like, that's neat. That's interesting. I like figuring out how life works. And so for me, I was lucky that nobody was like, but you didn't say that you wanted to be that 10 years ago. You know, you didn't have this plan all the way through. What are you going to do with that degree once you're done? Are you going to be this? Are you going to be this? Are you going to be this? I didn't have that. And I think I was lucky. I was in the sweet spot before everybody worried about what their kids were going to become. And they just wanted them to just go follow a path and then see where it took them. And so when I went to university, I didn't come in as some high scholar or anything like that. Like I was good, but I was pretty average good, right? And but what was neat was like if you, and I think this is maybe lesson two, is if you like something enough, you will outcompete everybody else around you. Because the fire in you where other people go home, you still stay to play. And I think that that's what my undergrad looked like. I came in as a normal student. My first exam I ever wrote, I studied my tail off. My bestie that studied with me got 90 and I got 69. And so like I wasn't stellar. I was somebody who had to learn to adjust to the university system because there's three types of learners that exist in the world: visuals, auditories, and kinesthetics. Visuals are people who like see things and then they can kind of pick it up from there. Auditories, you hear it and you're like, oh, do you remember when the professor said da da da? The kinesthetics were the ones where you got to move or you got to do something a little bit different. And for me, that kinesthetic piece of it was the piece that you don't get fired in university because you're sitting in a chair listening to a prof. And what I've really found, you know, staying in education for it's now over 23 years, I think, that I've been now in university land. But for me, in that university land, when I stay and play in it, what I understand so clearly is the students who normally are getting the 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe low 70s aren't less capable, but most of the time it's the kinesthetic learners. And the ones that are getting the 80s, 90s, most of the time you're just in their learning style. And the kinesthetics are always like, this is so unfair. I have to write notes out by hand. Like, I have to figure out how to kind of work with the information. But to me, that was the greatest gift because it didn't come easy. And when I figured out how I learned and then put that in play and then succeeded at a high level, it taught me that you don't just either have it or you don't. Like, it killed that fixed mindset piece of me. And put me into a growth mindset where it was like, I don't got it right now, but I could probably get it because I didn't have that thing, so I could probably get this thing. And I think that shift of me having to figure it out myself was so key because that was what allowed me to start climbing. And it was always just like, you didn't say no, okay, let's try the next thing. And and opportunities would come up on my path. I didn't question if it was the right opportunity. I didn't sit there and say, does this fit on the perfect resume that I would be trying to build? If somebody invited me to go to a conference, I just said, yes, can I get a ride? If somebody said, this professor is coming in and visiting and they're going to do a lecture, I was like, sure. And I'd sit up and I'd sit front row and I'd take notes on stuff I didn't understand, but I looked engaged and I smiled a lot and I listened to their conversations. And that was just what I did for about 5 years. And at the end of the 5 years, my goal was always to get a scholarship for grad school because, to be honest, I couldn't really afford to do it without it. And I didn't even have my sights set on like a huge scholarship or something. I was just like, if I could just get a little bit of help, like I could do a PhD. And so I worked really hard to try and get that scholarship. And so I applied in. And these are the old days where you apply in on paper. And applied in on paper. I get a letter back in the mail and it says, congratulations, you've earned the Julie Payette award from NSERC, which is the National Science and Engineering Research Council. And it's being named one of the top 24 students in all of Canada for all science and engineers. And I was like, I don't understand. I was like, I didn't even apply to this. I was like, what is this thing? I literally had to Google it to figure out what I'd earned. And then the year after that, I then earned the top scholarship for PhD students for 3 years, which was the maximum you could earn it for, which was the Alexander Graham Bell. And these things had maternity leaves built into them. And so I got married pretty young at 23, coming out of undergrad to the guy I dated since I was 17, Dave. He's still an awesome dude. We're still together. And so I just, you know, having those scholarships and those maternity leaves, everybody said, put your head down, build a great career, finish your PhD. Then, like, if you want to have kids after that, okay, fine. Like, you could go have some kids after that. But to me, it didn't make sense. And I think this is the piece that most of the time we miss. We're so busy listening to what somebody else's advice is we stop and we don't just have that intuition, that gut instinct of like, what's right in my life though? And in my life, you know, we had already been together for 8 years, Dave and I. We are ready to have kids. He'd worked full time for like 7 of those years. It didn't make sense for us to wait for another 4 or 5 years for us to have kids when I had a scholarship that had parental leaves built into it. And so we not only popped out one, but 2 children, just love pushing the bar just a little bit. And it was interesting because the reactions to the people around me, I think in the first child, I got the pat on the head, like, oh, you're so cute. You're having a baby alongside your PhD. That's lovely, right? The second one was a different story. The second one was actively people saying to me that I was ruining my career. And this has come into a 27-year-old pregnant girl who, you know, on paper, I had done everything right. And yet I was still being criticized because I wanted to have a family and have a career. And I think that that really caused me to start to like pick my head up a little bit more and say, whew, the people around me, are they running off the same value system that I'm running off of? And I think that that's a really important question to ask yourself, because if you're taking advice from them and they have a different software that's running their program, you're going to go in the wrong direction. And I don't know, Deb, if you've felt that way in your world where you can actively identify sometimes somebody giving you advice and you're like, whoa, we operate differently behind the scenes in our brains.
Well, absolutely. And I think that everybody who's prepping to be an entrepreneur and people who've chosen crafts that are creative, you know, like the stories that I get from colleagues of mine that are authors and directors, and was talking to someone yesterday who was a set designer, and just all of that in that world of creativity, in that world of creativity where there is, you know, less form, shall I say, or less conformity. Even then, it really, when you say running off your, you know, all these different operating systems, it's so true. And I think listening to yourself, for me, when I can't get there, like when I can't get there, or I have people giving me all sorts of different information, because here's the interesting thing, not all the information lands as a no. The most confusing things is when someone, I'm having a conversation with someone about something and it lands as a maybe, or it lands as a maybe, or a possibility. Now, if you're a woman like me, or a woman like you that goes, sure, I'll go to that, and sure, I'll go to that, and you're an exploratory person, and you love opportunity, it can get a little confusing. For me, I got to get super quiet. So I'll take in what other people think. I mean, when it's a no, it's a no. When you're not standing in your tribe, you know you're not in your tribe.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, the universe will show you pretty freaking quick. Right. It's just how fast are you observing that? And then I get really quiet. And for me, it comes out in writing. I always know when I need to seclude and do writing, because I bypass my own stuff. Or I actually have a couple of friends in my life that have full game, to be completely like blunt, honest, and I'll lay it out and they'll kind of lay it back to me. But it's very true. You know, when something doesn't land, that's when you know, I call it the penguin. You know, we're talking about movies. So, and you've got kids. So what was that movie that it was all those penguins?
Happy Feet.
And they were, which one?
Happy Feet.
Yeah. And it's like, smile and wave.
Yep.
Smile and wave. So you got to like, that's a great idea. And smile and wave with some people. And then
this is the thing that I think people are so scared to do, is they have somebody who's been successful and they're afraid to not take their advice. And like, you have to understand that they were successful. Yes. Running off their operating system with their values and goals, with how they want to like live their world. But if you follow their instructions, you're going that direction. If that's not your direction, then it's just not going to work out. You know, I love what I do in teaching, but there are colleagues of mine that I did my PhD with who are super close friends of mine that would detest my job. And like the concept of doing what I do on a daily basis would just make them want to shudder. And I feel the same way about what they do. And we are both very happy and successful, and we came through the same program. And so you have to also be so clear on like, are they living in a way I would want to live? And that was the thing that I think, being pregnant twice coming through there, the second time around, not such a warm welcome. I think, and even from my own inner circles too, right? Like this wasn't just like people on the outside, this is inner circle type stuff. But I think that what became so clear to me was I could not see another professor at all who was a woman who was living a life I wanted to live. And it didn't mean their lives were bad. And that's the other thing. Just because you don't want to do what they do doesn't mean that they're doing it wrong. It just means that that's not a fit for you. You know, Tony Robbins gave a phenomenal TED Talk, I don't know, 2.5 decades ago, right? And he talked about the things of like what will allow you to be alive. And so we've got these four basic human needs, you know, the need to belong in a social group, and then the need to be unique. And yes, those are contrary. You know, the need to, need to belong, need to be independent, need for control, like certainty, and then the love of uncertainty, right? And he made a hilarious joke in there. He's like, you know, how many people love surprises? And everybody's like, yeah, me. And they're like, no, you like the surprises you like a birthday party. You don't like the surprise like you lost your job, right? So like these balances of you know, belonging versus uniqueness, control and certainty versus like randomness. That you can hit all those boxes and you can work that out, but you're not going to be fulfilled and happy even checking those boxes. And so the ones that actually lead you to the happiness in life are the two boxes above that, which he called, I think it was the art of fulfillment, which was the idea of growth or contribution. And if what you're doing is growth and contribution in it, then that's when you actually get to the point where you feel the joy, where you feel the happiness, that like head hits the pillow. You're like, I'm doing the right thing, even if people around me don't think I am. And I could see science in what I was doing, check the first four boxes. But for me, those other two boxes, growth and contribution, were defined differently than other people's. For some people, it's the number of publications you put into this world. And it's that legacy of information that you've determined. That wasn't it for me. I didn't actually care about getting published. I still don't care about getting published. Like, I don't care about my name being on stuff. That it was, and that wasn't an ego game of me being like, I'm better than you. It was just the truth. I just don't care. I love learning it. I don't need my name on it. And so it's really interesting when you figure out what the drivers are, and then be like, whose information should I be taking in? Whose advice should I be taking? Who builds a world like I do?
I think that you hit a key word there, and that's the drivers. So yes. I think when you're looking at someone who is successful in whatever area of your life, because we've got more than one, and they all kind of have a relationship to each other. And so when you're, I have a famous saying, and I always have when I've coached, trained, spoken, whatever, I'm like, don't go to your bank manager for advice on your marriage. But it's interesting because sometimes we do. If you love how someone is in business and you get into a personal relationship, that might flow over. And you might go, hey, you know what? They're really good. They're just really successful. And then I just go say, make sure where you're taking your information from is that person living that way. And again, nothing else is wrong. But I think it comes down to like there's some fundamental success strategies that if you talk to, you know, 100% of people that are in success, you're going to find a consistency in about 70 to 80% of them. So take those principles and then adapt it on how you want to play out. It's no different than we all know that sleep's important, but some people sleep from 9 till 4 and some people sleep from 11 till 10. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter when you sleep. We just know that you need to sleep. So if there's some success principles that you've used or there's some mentoring principles that you've used, it's about adaptation, right? I think it's very much. So the drivers can be the same. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard the saying that it's good to be in two positions, one where you're giving down like your mentor ring. Like, it was interesting. Yes. It was so karmic. I had a call yesterday from a woman who in a certain level in my where I'm wanting to go in business has more information than I do. Right. So she's having success in that area. So she was giving me some mentorship. It literally was the same mentorship I was giving to someone the day before because they were where I used to be. Now I'm here. Yeah. This woman's there and she's telling me, and she's like, so do you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, actually I just, you know, gave the same story to someone else. So I think it's always good to be in that middle zone. You can gift what you can backwards, but I always say give respect, first of all, upwards and to people that have done it before you. They may not have done it the exact same way because they've had a different culture, different generation, different rules, different regulations, right? But by nature, always kind of seeing the people that have carved the path. Doesn't have to be the exact same one, but if you have the same goal, just take the principles or like you say, the drivers, and then adapt them to yourself. And that comes in wisdom of business, right? And that comes from, you know, in the early days, you're like, you know, you're kind of like, I don't know, where do I go? Where do I go?
And I think that, you know, when you want to think about building a business, like I built two businesses. One was in health and wellness that I started in the PhD. Second one was also in the PhD, starting university teaching and tutoring. There's a couple of things that I think are important about that. One is you have to let go of other people thinking that you actually know what you're doing. You may know what you're doing, but they will not believe it most of the time in the early days. And it's interesting to watch that shift and split and change. I've had a business in health and wellness now for 11 years. And it's so funny because in the early days, I got asked, what the heck would I possibly know about health and wellness? I'm wasting my time. Why am I putting my time in this place? That's not going to be a good career. Like I heard all of the reasons why it wasn't going to be successful. And the other interesting thing was, you know, people saying like, do you know how hard it is to be an entrepreneur? Did you know 90% of businesses fail? Well, yeah, 100%. But do you know me? Because like, I don't really quit stuff once I start it. And so like, I don't really care about the 9 out of 10 over there that duck out, because I'm the 1 out of 10 that's probably going to stick it out if it makes sense to me. And so I think we get in this fear culture where at the beginning, it's the hardest because everybody's telling you, you have no idea what you're doing. The middle, they kind of back off and they leave you alone because they're like, she hasn't fallen down yet, but like, I don't know if she's really going to make it. And then once you come through where people actually respect what you do and they think, wow, like you're so steadfast, like you must love this, you live it, you embody it, this is clearly who you are as a person. Then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I always knew you'd be successful. Like, you know, you have like, you're just like, it's easy for you. And you're like, you were the same human who told me a decade ago I was wasting my time, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to, like, when we talk about letting go of what other people think, that is a game that will take most humans decades. I honestly think, you know, like I'm just over 40 now. I'm still getting there. I'm getting close. I'm pretty good at it now, but like it takes serious time and unfortunately serious criticism that you still stand up against. And it doesn't mean you got to fight back. You can have somebody chirp you and you can just smile and keep walking. You don't have to be combative about it, but you have to let go of people's opinions a certain amount of times before you finally will understand that what you decide you're going to do in your day matters the most. Whether or not somebody else would get up and do what you do doesn't matter. It really just matters if you're going to drive yourself. And I think the fear in entrepreneurship and why people quit is because they think they should have succeeded a certain amount by a certain time point. And then they're just like, oh, I'm never going to make it. And you just got to recognize that's a fixed mindset. That's an all or nothing. You just haven't made it yet. I think mm-hmm. yet might be the most empowering word in the human language. Cause like you can tack it on the end of any sentence, right? You're not physically fit yet. You're not great with your nutrition yet. You don't have a good skincare routine yet. You haven't learned French yet, right? Like you can literally decide to just tack that word on anything. And if you understand that all that's between you and whatever you want is time, effort, and consistency, you'll get there. Now, you may not get there in the timeline that you wish. Everybody loves instant gratification. We have Amazon. So like we grew up and now exist in a time period where like life mm-hmm. goes.
Absolutely.
Businesses don't. Any business that builds in an instant gratification mode will also crash very quickly. You have to have foundation. You have to have stability. You have to have clients that actually enjoy being around you. You have to have people who love your product or service. You have to have people that you treat well and that want to continue coming back in your circles again and again. And that's the stability in business. But that can be so fulfilling if you've built it around something that you believe contributes well to this world. And for some people, that will be nails. And for some people, that would be hair care. For somebody else, that is a personal development like workshop. For somebody else, that's a yoga studio. For like everybody's going to have a different version of what contribution looks like to them. You take the drivers and you apply it to whatever you believe contribution is. And then that's where you build.
When you're talking, it reminds me of a very good friend of mine. His name's Pooya Gandhian. And he, when you say the word yet, so he used to coach me out a lot in my business. And so when we're talking, he would catch me saying something. And instead of saying yet, he would say in the past. Mm-hmm. So in the past, I wasn't da 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 da. In the past, because it really closes it off. Because in that moment, then it makes it different in the moment, right? So in the past, I was good at this. oh, I'm hearing a little reverberation. In the past, I wasn't this. In the past, I wasn't that. And so it was almost like, as you say it, it changes immediately. So yet becomes right in that moment. So it's very cool. It's very cool. And I think that, you know, I was listening and I listened to, oh my gosh, yesterday was Steve Harvey. The day before was Simon Sinek. Like I wake up and I look and I go, okay, who does, you know, what is the universe or what is God delivered on my YouTube? I literally take the first YouTube every, like, as that's what I'm supposed to listen to in the morning while I'm having my shower. So yesterday was Steve Harvey. And if you listen to the new way of motivation, they talk about the success of failure so often. And I think the paradigm of being afraid to be one that failed, I think we all are coming around the idea that just because it didn't work out doesn't mean it was failed. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday about this in terms of divorce. I'm like, so, you know, they were married 15 years and I was married 17 years. And I'm like, you know, that's not a failure. I said, I'm sure we both felt like that at the time because people use the word failed marriage. And we even said, we're going to look up the word divorce and see what the Latin is for it, right? I'm sure it's something like disease or something. But I'm like, 17 years or 20 years is 20 years of doing something, like one quarter of your life, if you hit the, you know, 100 to the 100 to the roof, that's not failure. Like that's not failure. So it's just that stepping stone.
There were lessons, right? Like you, you could, if you chose to have the awareness, which is what most of us avoid, most of us don't want to look at what we actually do for moves in our life. And instead we'd rather watch Netflix. And like, I understand the desire to tap out, but you will continue to hit the same lessons on repeat until you decide to tap in and figure out what you're doing, what is causing you to get in that trajectory. And so if you start a business, but then your time management sucks. Yeah. So did most of ours. In fact, all of ours. Nobody was born with the skill set of time management as a child, right? Like that's not what you come in the world with. So we all had to learn it somehow. And we probably all did it by making mistakes. Anybody who has a kick-ass calendar has a kick-ass calendar because they forgot enough stuff. That's just, right. That's the way it is, right? Like we didn't just decide to have this insane, like my calendar, there are 11 calendars that feed into one major calendar, including husbands, kids stuff. And like anybody can program anything in at any time. That's because I can't remember anything. So like, I have to have that, right? And so, you know, when you felt, you know, there was a point in my life where I was getting up at 5:30 in the morning to read personal growth and development before getting the kids up, the toddlers up at 6:30 to take them to daycare before working 8 to 5 at the university and then picking them back up and then going out and working my business from like usually 7 to 10, 10:30 at night and then come home and like 11, 11:30 at night, tap back into bed, and do it again. There was no Netflix in that life. And you know what? It was busy. It was a little crazy. And at the same time, I don't regret it at all because my time management skills, man, I am like Yoda on that now. Like I have the ability to see a 10 minute window and what I can get done in it, or should I get 10 minutes and just sit down, right? Like I have that ability to be able to do those things, but that's because I was so bad at it for so long, you know? And so this idea of failure, what we forget is that you're labeling something as an endpoint when it's not an endpoint. It's just still going. And so you only fail when you decide in your own head that you're a failure and you tap out. Other than that, you're still just on the journey and you haven't failed.
So here's a question I have for you, because I know that things are going to wrap up fairly quickly. And I'd love to get to this question is, so, okay, look, you've been up against it. You've had people say yes. You've had people saying no. You've had people encourage you. You've had people go, that's nice, pat you on the head and turn around and go, wouldn't want that life. You've had, you haven't had anyone in your gender that necessarily was doing what you wanted to do. So you kind of had to carve your own path. And we talked about that earlier, carving your own path. So when it gets down to it, like I shared, one of the things that I do is like, I just close the door and I start journaling, or I turn my phone off, or whatever we do. We all have our stuff. And I'm sure you do as well. Yep. So when you're in the thick of it, what's your go-to? Where do you find your peace and your solace in that conversation with yourself? Or when you're in the thick of it, what do you do?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a huge journaler as well, because I think that you have to have the awareness to figure out what your own head is saying before you can actually like step back and observe. But I would say the biggest stress reliever of mine when I am in a state of like, oh my God, I'm going, is the small moments when you're like showering, putting your makeup on, or like whatever those, when I'm making lunch or something like that, it's music for me. Because the interesting thing about music, and I've got some pretty extensive playlists, but the interesting thing about music is my playlists are all named differently. And it's the feeling I would want from that music at that point. So if I was feeling like somebody just tramped on me, or like somebody said something unkind, or somebody said something that although I wish it didn't sting, stings, right? Teflon's not 100% yet. Then I will go to a playlist that is literally called Be a Queen in my Spotify that I created, that has all types of music that is built on basically being like, you are good enough as you are, exactly as you are, don't modify. Because I need somebody to whisper that in my ear at that exact moment. Mm-hmm. And I find with music, you can choose beats, you can choose like types of melodies that will cause your physical body to move, and your emotional bodies kind of work with your physical bodies. And so for me, music is my best life hack. If I need to pick myself up from something, and also if I need to calm myself down from something, right? Like if I'm feeling fiery about something, whew, there's a playlist for that to be like, take a breath, dude. Like you need to not write an email. You need to not text somebody back right now. Like you just need to take a few minutes. And I think that once you understand that you control your reactions in this world, and you can choose how you react in a certain situation, and you can take the 5 seconds to be conscious enough to throw on the playlist that says like, Meg, you're in the fiery zone right now, like bring it down. I think that that's the smartest thing you can do, because I don't want anyone to be in the zone of how my instinctual emotional reaction is without my awareness of how I would choose to react in that situation. And I think if you want to build a reputation, a long game of being hopefully a kind, great human who is even keel, who is somebody that people can come to, can talk to, your vault, you're not going to say things that you shouldn't be saying. If you want to be that human in this world, you're going to have to determine a measure of control to get yourself out of that instinct mode. And so I always make sure that I'm not reacting anymore. Instead, I'm responding to people around me.
Right. Well, gee, I don't know what music's about. I mean, I'm like, you're sitting there like music. I'm like, I always say to people if I'm late, and not that was today, but if I'm ever late for a meeting, you know, it's because I just can't hang up till I hear the end of that song. Right. It's not for any other reason. But okay. So what next? What next for Dr. Meg Haggett? What are you working on? What's coming on? Do you see something different in your future? Is there something playing in the back of your mind? Are you just loving exactly where you are in this moment, and you're running the moment, or what's going on?
I think, you know, it's neat, because I always had a vision in my world of not necessarily the job titles I wanted, but how I wanted to feel in my day. And how I wanted to feel in my day was the choice to be able to do things I wanted to do or not want to do. The choice to be able to control my own time, work that I believed contributed positively to people around me, and setting an example to the people around me as well, that was you can continue to just become a person who's more at ease with yourself over time. And so I'd say I'm probably like a 9 out of 10 on where I want to be in my world. Now, I wasn't a 9 out of 10 a decade ago. I was a right. 1 out of 10, but that trajectory is, I'm very aware of where I want to go. So right now I get, like, to me, it's almost just like a kid in a candy store games. I get to work in both science and in business. So I still teach university level. And then I also have a health and wellness business. They intertwine with each other so well, because I get all the science from the university side. And then I get all the knowledge from the people who actually like stand in a gym, or who are a naturopath, or who like work in the health and wellness side. And they all just give it to me. And then I get to be this like middle zone that just gets to integrate all of that together and then put it in play in my own world, which allows me to be strong and flexible and be able to move the way that I want to. So I love the space I'm in, where I've inhabited, because I got to somehow dance between the non-scientists and the scientists, and I get to move the information back and forth. And I think that that communication piece is so key. I love working with predominantly 20-year-olds. I think that generation just needs somebody to believe in them and tell them that they can trust their own instincts. and that it will be okay. They don't need to outcompete the entire class because they will never go up against a job interview with that human in their job. And so like you, you know, being somebody who I think hopefully inspires the next generation, but not inspires them like, oh my God, you're great, but more has that aspirational piece to it where it's like, huh, how can I become somebody that seems so uniquely different in a group where everybody else seems the same, right? And and I think that I've been able to carve that out in science. And so I think I just want to keep doing exactly what I'm doing, but I don't know where that will go. Like I couldn't tell you where I'm going to be in 5 years or 10 years because it will be on some type of path that's influencing humans in hopefully a positive way. It will probably be still rolling in the sciences somehow because I love it. But the job I have now where I basically private teach university, that didn't exist even 7 years ago. And so who knows what the next seven will have on the education side. But I do think it's so important for students to understand, like if there's anybody who's in university listening to this right now, you don't have to be on a timeline. There's no race to being 27 with however many degrees and whatever job you land and the house that you bought and the blah, 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 blah. You know, people always assume that because I have a PhD that I would be very hardcore about my children doing higher education. And actually, the advice in our house is the opposite. It's go live in a foreign country. Go be an au pair somewhere. Why don't you work at Tim Hortons for a while? See what that's like. Like, why don't you do some stuff before you decide on a career? I was so lucky that my inspiration came when I was in high school. That was actually something that I continue to love and still do love to this day. You still show me a movie like Outbreak and I'm all in. But I was lucky. I got that inspiration. If you're 17 or 19 or 27 or 35, and you're like, I have no idea what I want to do, that's still okay. Because you got a lot of life and a lot of careers that are potentially possible. Just figure out what you love. You know, do a little sunshine diagram on a piece of paper and be like, how do I spend my time? And pick one of those areas and start doing more stuff in that area. And eventually you'll find a space for yourself that will be unique and different and probably nobody else occupies, but that's what we need, right? We need those new spaces to be opened up.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. When I was listening to the story yesterday about now I'm in Canada and I imagine that this is a company that's in the US and it's, I don't even remember the name of the pie company, but so the speaker was talking about how, like, what are you good at? Like, what do people say? Oh my gosh, you're so good at this. It's like everyone has a gift and you can describe that gift. And if that gift feels and fills you full of passion, then that's a great place to start. And then however you take it out in the world, I mean, I didn't, same as you, there's things that are coming that haven't been created yet. Podcasts aren't that, you know, they're not brand new, but they're new. They're still new. I mean, who knew? Who knew you'd be on a podcast? Who knew I'd have a podcast? Yeah. But anyways, there was a story of this woman who worked at a diner and she needed that money. Like she was like, that was everything. She needed that money. And that diner, it was like a greasy spoon diner. And that diner was closing because the hamburgers weren't selling, you know? And so she said, I need this job. So let me, you know what? People like my pie. Let me go home. She left the diner, went home, baked a pie and came back and all the slices of the pie sold. And so people came back the next day. So she went home and she baked four pies and she came back and all the pies sold. And then people were coming back going, I just want to buy the pie. So she went home and baked pies and they sold pies. And eventually they put in a commercial oven in her home. And eventually the diner stopped selling hamburgers, fries, salads, tunas. All they sold was pie. Now, this woman has her frozen pies are in every store in the U.S. And I wish I could remember what the name is, but I don't. And I thought, what a great story where there's somebody who didn't even know their gift, but was like, well, people like my pie. So people tell me they like my pie. Maybe that's what I'm good at. And this woman is a very wealthy woman where she has restaurants and franchises all over the U.S. and all they sell is pie. So that story.
Yeah, to that end, like, you know, when I was in my PhD and I was good at research, like it wasn't like I was bad at it, but it didn't really light me up. Like it wasn't a thing that just made my heart sing. But man, I love TAing. Like I love teaching in the inner classes. Mm-hmm. And man, I love learning the students' names and actually hearing where they were from and hearing how they engaged with the world and how did they end up choosing this? I mean, like I was a freaking movie. So like, how did you end up here? Right? Like I love the stories behind them. But then I also loved when they would be like, this is really hard for me. And I could be like, I get that. I remember that moment in time. And so like, if I could give you any advice, this is what I'd say to that. Like, you know, here's how I'd handle that. Or here's what I do next. I love that intersection of engaging with them. Now, do I want to be a counselor? Nope, sure don't. Because I also love science. But somehow that development, when I started tutoring students, is still just a student, just it was actually in prep of my PhD defense that I decided to tutor, opened up this window where my students became lifers with me. Like I had students who would start with me in first year, and I just intended to tutor them in one course, but then 4 years later would still be tutoring these guys, and they became friends, and they became like people I would hang out with. And that developed into them asking me to teach for a private company for the MCATs for medical doctors, which then developed into teaching at the university level now, you know, hundreds of students and classes, that is this private university game. But it's funny because in London, like, not to sound weird, but like I get recognized all the time. I'm just Meg. Like I'm just like a biologist. Like there's no reason that me wandering around the city would be recognized. But I do at the gym, like when I'm out for dinner, stuff like that, because the students know me. Because what people are missing is that 77% of millennials want a relationship with any business that they're going to interact with. But they also want that with humans. And the fact that I'm an accessible person who actually cares about their story and will hop on Zoom and chat with them for 20 minutes just to see, you know, like if they need anything, in like if they come to me with a question or something, I'll do that stuff. And that brings me joy and happiness and fulfillment. But now I make a great living off of doing the same thing. That didn't exist 7 years ago. And so like, just like the girl with the pies, like if you have something that nobody else is really, there's a gap. And there was a gap between university being too formal and the actual students. There was a gap there. They needed somebody in the middle that could talk both languages. And I just fill that space. And so the great part is like when you see those gaps, be okay stepping into that, even if nobody stepped there before, because that may be where the magic is.
There you guys, you heard it. Go find the gap. Go find the gap. Okay, we need to wrap up. And I have a final question for you. But Meg, if people want to reach out to you, you know, you mentioned that you've got a health and wellness business. Lots of people have health and wellness. Maybe they have other questions about the other things that you're doing. Where can they reach you?
Yeah, Instagram, Facebook is by far still the best. And so it's at Meg Haggett. So M-E-G and then Haggett has two G's, two T's. So M-E-G and then H-A-G-G-I-T-T. And you can DM me, shoot me messages or whatever. I definitely... You know, I'm still a competitive soccer player. I love the fitness side of it. I love health and wellness, the nutrition side of it, because I teach all the biochem. I teach the nutrition, the human physiology. So I love being that blend of all those different worlds. So if you have questions, always feel free to reach out. I'm happy to answer and happy to connect on that side. And then the health and wellness side, that's more of a product-based company. That it's funny, like I found them on Google 11 years ago, and they were just, they fit the niche I was looking for. They were plant-based, they were clean beauty, clean health, and that was what I wanted. And so they've just been my awesome grocery store slash business that I've built alongside for the last 11 years. So that's probably the easiest way to find me is on social.
Perfect. Perfect. And we'll have it in the show notes as well. So now the question that I'm going to ask you, you are not allowed to give me an answer of anything like a playlist, but you're heading on a desert island. You got one suitcase. You're like me and martinis, or, you know, the rest of my life. It's, you know, me and mangoes. Okay, you've got room for one album in your suitcase. Which album are you going to take, music girl?
We're doing one album, eh?
One album, and it can't be a greatest hits. No, it can be a greatest hits. It just can't be like the best of the 80s.
Okay, I'm just going to go straight out with Pitbull, because I'm going to need a pep talk being alone on a desert island, and that dude will make me dance.
So Pitbull will be your album?
So I feel like it might've been called Around the World, but it was like maybe two albums of his ago.
Okay. I didn't know if you were talking about the artist or the dog, because you're like, I need something to.
Pitbull the artist. Like,
okay. Got it.
The pep talk. Got it. For sure. And also if any of you guys have never looked that guy up, he's also got a crazy interesting life and he's an excellent speaker.
Cool. Good to know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good to know. Well, what a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for sharing. You guys do what you do best and reach out and share and spread the word. So many great drops in there. Like really, there was just so many great drops about ideas of life, a philosophy of business, the correlation between the two. Honestly, I heard a lot of things about just be you. Really, I heard a lot of things about just be you, be cool where you are, expect to tumble a little bit, carve your own path. All those good things that you need to be reminded of if you plan to take this quest, honestly, not just life, but decisions, right? Decisions, you know, hanging out with the Eagles, you know, people will say that, oh, there's a good music one, hanging out with the Eagles, listening from people that you really respect in the area of which you respect them, right? So look, if you want to be sitting where Dr. Meg Haggett is sitting today and you want to come on to the show, you know how to reach us. It's super easy. It's not difficult. It's deb@debdrummond.com. You can also find us on social media. And don't forget, we have an incredible book that is launching International Women's Day. Mark that day off on your calendar. You don't have to be a woman to come. And we are expecting somewhere between 2,000 to 2,500 incredible people coming on for the book launch of 262 women that are talking the exact same stuff that we talked about today. So it's Mission Accepted, 262 women, entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs, creatives, and media, rock legacy and tell all. And we will have 8 summits once every week from International Women's Day all the way to Mother's Day, where we will bookend, isn't that so good? Bookend that summit with yet another book launch of the most incredible stories, and there'll be speakers all through that. So you got the email, you know how to reach out. We're so grateful for you, because without you, there wouldn't be the show. And you know what, you guys? Stay groovy. We'll see you next week. Bye for now. Thanks, Meg.
Bye.